Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segreto, and this is Franchise Today. Today, my guest is Steve Ellerhorst, CEO and Executive Director at the International Association of Franchisees and Dealers. Steve and I will discuss franchisee associations and their benefits to franchise organizations of all sizes. Last week, as you may recall, we concluded the Franchise Finance series on Franchise Today. The series was the brainchild of my co-producer, Joe Caruso. His personal insight into franchise finance set the foundation for me to ask some riveting questions of Daryl Johnson, CEO at Frandata, last week's guest, and, of course, Ron Feldman, CEO at Siegel Capital, my guest the week before. During the two-part series, we touched on SBA 504 and 7A programs, the current state of financing, and its effect on the future of franchising. I'd like to thank both Daryl and Ron for being guests on our show. I'd also like to express my personal thanks to Joe Caruso, who spearheaded yet another very well-received series. Both segments of the Franchise Finance series are available on demand at www.blogtalkradio.com/franchisetodayshow. And next Thursday, which is right before the 4th of July holiday weekend, Franchise Today will take a week off as most of the franchise community prepares for a relaxing extended holiday weekend. We're looking forward to that as well. Then the following Thursday, July 8th, Franchise Today will return with the start of Franchise Marketing Month. As franchising continues to dig out of the hole created by recent economic events, many franchisors are exploring various ways to attract franchise candidates and to improve brand awareness. That means during July, social media, mobile, and email marketing will be featured as key components of our discussions about integrated franchise marketing. Each week in July will feature case study discussions with executives from franchising and from subject experts that have actually worked hand-in-hand with franchise companies from the vendor position. In addition, my company, Franchise Essentials, and I will conduct a series of webinars throughout the month of July defining the how-tos of social media, mobile, and email marketing within franchise organizations, which we've dubbed the Holy Trinity of Franchise Marketing. The highlight will be the final webinar, which will explain how to bring all three together and enhance them with local marketing. So, that's four case study discussions and four how-to webinars relating to franchise marketing. A wealth of information indeed, and guess what? It's all at no cost to you. So, stay tuned for more details about Franchise Marketing Month in July. As many of our listeners know, Wednesday mornings also finds me on Blog Talk Radio, as I'm also host on Franchise News Radio at 7 a.m. Central, 8 a.m. Eastern Time each Wednesday. The show typically runs 20 to 25 minutes and covers important franchise news from print and online publications, press releases, and even social media. In addition, each show features the IFA Corner, where we cover news and happenings from the International Franchise Association. Of course, I also provide some of my own insight and thoughts and sometimes sarcasm, you know, just to shake things up a bit and make it even more interesting and hopefully entertaining. Franchise News Radio segments are available on demand at www.blogtalkradio.com/franchisenewsradio. Also, follow the show within social media on Twitter at Fran News Radio. Speaking about the IFA, if you haven't already done so, I highly recommend, I challenge you to do what I did last week, and you send your check in for the amount of $365 to FranPAC. That's just a dollar a day. For more information on how to help the IFA help franchising on Capitol Hill, then I suggest you visit the IFA website at www.franchise.org. Look for the tab on FranPAC. While you're at it, You know, if you're not already a member of the IFA as either a franchisor or a supplier, I implore you to become a member today. So pick up the phone and contact Paul Rocchio over at the IFA or sign up today. Or go online, again, at franchise.org and sign up. I guarantee you it's worth the investment for sure. Now, here's something interesting from the IFA. Earlier this year, the Maryland General Assembly approved a revision on the delivery requirements under the Maryland franchise law that IFA supported. After October 1st, the state's franchise disclosure delivery requirements won't differ substantively from the FTC franchise rule. New provisions require a franchisor to deliver the required form of FDD at the earlier of 14 calendar days before a prospective franchisee signs a binding agreement with a franchisor or pays any consideration relating to the franchise relationship or a prospective franchisee's reasonable request for a copy of the FDD. Wow, will there ever be total consistency from one state to the next? I'm not sure. Anyway, our co-producer, Joe Caruso, I know testified on the Hill about this law. So I really think you need to look more into it. Thank people in franchising like Joe Caruso that testified on behalf of franchising. Coming up in July, Great Plant Moody Principal Carl Swisler, iFranchise Group Senior Advisor Leonard Schwartz, and Michael Side and Associates Managing Director Kay Ainsley will take the lead to present an online discussion of international franchising on a budget July 7th during an IFA Wednesday Wise webinar. As we know, sessions are sponsored by the IFA Supplier Forum, of which I am a member. The one-hour webinar, which begins at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, includes time for participants to ask questions. Session attendees will also receive 50 CFE participation credits. It seems, the IFA convention just happened, but here we go again. Early bird registration for IFA's 2011 annual convention is now available. If you register before September 15th, you'll receive a $50 discount off the regular convention fee, which the convention is February 13th to 16th. And we'll be at the MGM Grand Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas. That's right, Sin City. So I highly recommend that you jump on the bandwagon right now, sign up, save yourself $50, but more importantly, plan that trip. As mentioned earlier at the top of the show, or I mentioned about Franpak, and I think there's another thing within franchising, within the IFA, that you need to look at, and that's the IFA Public Affairs Conference. It needs your voice. Your presence in Washington, D.C. this fall will help make IFA's 11th Annual Public Affairs Conference a success. It's your opportunity to personally tell congressional leaders about the importance of franchise small businesses to the U.S. economy and to the economic recovery of the country. Mark your calendar, September 13th through 14th, for the conference to be conducted at the JW Marriott in Washington, D.C. NBC News political director and chief White House correspondent Chuck Todd will headline the conference, which is co-sponsored by ADP. As I also mentioned at the very top of the show, today's guest is Steve Ellerhorst. Steve was a Hardee's employee for 20 years. And then a franchisee for about 10 years. He helped form the IHFA, which is the Independent Hardee's Franchisee Association, and put together the website they currently have at www.ihfa.com. He worked with the IHFA for about 8 years on the steering committee, and from 2000 to 2008, Steve was the executive director of the IHFA. Tough acronym there. He worked briefly with the NFA, which is the Burger King Association, and then took a job with the Curves Franchisee Association. He is currently the CEO and Executive Director of the International Association of Franchisees and Dealers, which, of course, we know as the IAFD. Steve, it's great having you as a guest, so welcome to Franchise Today.
Thanks, Paul, and I appreciate the very gracious introduction.
Those acronyms are around.
to quote Dr. Evil, the details of my life are inconsequential, really. And I mean that in the sense that those details may add up to a great deal of experience, but there still remains a significant need among franchisees as small business owners, and their ability to form, maintain, retain, sustain strong independent franchisee associations. And that's really over the last decade or two where my passion has driven me.
Well, you certainly have a quite a resume. And I know, as I said, you spent 20-plus years prior to your involvement with franchisees for franchisee associations working within franchise operations. If you would, please share with our audience some of that experience, how it led to your involvement in franchisee associations, and maybe how that experience has really helped you in your current dealing with franchisee associations.
It's a great question, Paul, and I don't know that there's a logical progression to this. You and I have communicated briefly prior to this, but I started actually in fast food in 1974. I think I was 5 or 6 at the time. Kidding. I was 17. I just don't like my age to be completely disclosed. But and that was with a small regional group called Burger Chef, which was primarily Midwestern driven, but there were franchisees across the country.
Mm-hmm.
In that period of time, I was able to experience the delights of scrubbing bathrooms, sidewalks. As previously mentioned, I did a stint as a human trash compactor when the dumpster was too full. And then went through the whole routine of becoming an assistant manager and a manager and a training manager and a district manager. And ultimately got into the point where I did do a little stint in college there, but always came back to what I really kind of enjoyed doing, which wasn't as much the food business, but just understanding the business of small business. And eventually I became on the corporate end, what was referred to as a franchise business consultant. They are called franchise business leaders in other groups, et cetera. But that led me to have direct interaction with franchisees. I worked 3 or 4 states and got to know them very intimately and began to understand just a whole new side of the equation that I never understood before.
Hmm. That's interesting.
Well, the lesson that I was absolutely first taught was I had a franchisee that I worked with, and I always took the approach that I was not an inspector. I was a business builder. This was about helping franchisees become more successful based on my institutional knowledge. So I remember meeting for the first time with a franchisee that I to this day highly respect. And his first comment to me was, okay, you're the new guy, but you're not going to be around that long. He said, what happens is either you're no good and you get fired, or you're too good and you get promoted. So don't necessarily tell me what to do because I have a 20-year contract.
You know, I worked with another franchise organization, in operations in the service industries. And every time when I first started up, would show up and a franchisee would say, now what's your name? And, of course, this was back when, before the Internet and stuff, and he'd take out his Rolodex card and across the top said operations manager, and there was 8 or 9 names already crossed out or erased. Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to write this down in pencil. So if you're not here in 6 months, I could erase it. And then I might even use erasable ink. But if you last over a year for whatever reason, I'll go ahead and write it down in ink. I might even give you your own card.
Well, that is the reality, Paul,
yeah,
of what franchising is about. It's that it's not always about what the current leadership is doing or what the current contract says or how you feel about the people that you're doing business with. It's always about who is going to be the next guy.
Right.
And
correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't you work, you and Joe Caruso worked at Hardee's at the same time, correct?
We did. We had occasion to meet on several occasions, and I just reconnected with Joe in May at the International Association of Franchisees and Dealers inaugural convention here in Indianapolis, and that's a mouthful right there.
Isn't it amazing? I mean, what a great small world within franchising.
Well, and what actually is amazing is that it's not just that it's a small world or that you might even label it as derogatorily as incestuous, but what has happened with the proliferation of franchisee associations and subsequently umbrella associations as we have established with the IAFD, that this becomes a real live network, much like LinkedIn is in a general sense on the internet, but this is like real live people that are connected and promoting those connections creates a synergy and a dynamic that is what I believe is truly important in franchising today, because it doesn't matter what channel you come from, whether it happens to be hamburgers or auto care or hair care or fitness centers, there are commonalities that need to be explored, exchanged, and that network is critically important to those groups if they want to survive or have some relevance.
Well, you know, I agree. There continues to be some confusion about the purpose of franchisee associations and to a lot of people, even within franchising, even what they are. In a Reader's Digest condensed version, how would you define franchisee associations, and what is their purpose?
Well, there's often been what I would consider an extreme misnomer that franchisee associations are not much more than unions. But there's a real significant difference between those, and that is that franchisee associations form not in order to promote better wages or benefits, but to promote better relationships between the franchisor and the franchisee community at large in order to make the individual franchisee more successful as a small business owner.
Okay.
Go ahead, please.
I was going to say, a couple of weeks ago, we had Greg Nathan from the Franchise Relationships Institute on, and I know he's real big about promoting franchise relationships, and it just makes me wonder, because I'm a firm believer and a very staunch proponent of interdependency of franchise relationships, why it even needs to be a discussion. To me, to use Daryl Johnson's phrase last week, it seems to be common sense. So, you know, as we have to bring that out to the forefront, I kind of get dismayed that franchise relationships have to be talked about in such a way that we need to work towards them. But it is what it is, and it is the nature of the beast, and I understand that. And I firmly believe that we need to do everything we possibly can to strengthen franchise relationships, without a doubt.
Well, I've often said, and it's often been said by others, that the contractual relationship between a franchisee and a franchisor is not unlike a marriage. But I qualify that by saying the only difference is it's easier to get divorced from your spouse.
It sure is.
So in that sense, unfortunately, because there is a contract, and because in many cases life savings, houses, you know, children's and grandchildren's futures are on the line, that common sense that you are referring to is somewhat relegated to a highly emotionally charged attitude about what might be a contentious relationship.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't necessarily have to be.
No, I don't think it has to be. I think the key there is communications.
Absolutely. And what's most interesting about franchisee associations, and I think that you and or the listeners will find this to be true by doing even a small bit of due diligence, is that a number of them are formed because a crisis has occurred.
Yeah,
the franchisor is being acquired, or the franchisor has brought in new leadership, which has just turned the whole business model around, or the franchisor is infringing on areas of control that they never before had, and that brings the masses to their feet and willing to do whatever it takes to go to battle. That's typical. It's not necessary, but it's not unusual.
Along those lines, I mean, as you know, most of our listeners are franchisors.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the adversarial situations that occur, many of them have fears about franchisee associations. So, you know, how do we dispel those fears? I mean, you know, why shouldn't they be afraid? Because I think really the ultimate question is, what's in it for them?
Well, egos aside, and that's always a difficult proposition, because franchisees as independent owners, particularly those that might have a significant investment in a certain system,
mm-hmm.
will have certain ego issues. I don't mean issues like problems, but they have a protective sense.
Sure.
And rightfully so. The franchisor is often led by a CEO who, by their very nature, is ego-driven. And so it really becomes a matter of deciding what's more important. Is it more important to feed your ego or to sustain your business? And if you can come to the conclusion, as an association that is backed by its constituency, that being successful business people far outweighs whether or not who's right or wrong or whose ego is fed or not. It's a startling realization, but once again, you know, you called it common sense before. Easy to say, not always easy to do. If you will, I'll give you a case in point, with no names being named or no systems being named. But
absolutely.
But having been through a number of confrontational meetings, one of my proudest moments as an executive director was that we were able to guide this board of directors of a franchisee association to understand the principle that I just outlined to you, to the extent that the CEO stood up in front of an audience of franchisees and said, some of my best ideas have come from the franchisees. Now, you really have to dissect that sentence to understand the absolute importance of it.
Yeah. Some of my best ideas have come from the franchise. I like that.
Some of my best ideas.
That's
what putting ego aside is all about.
Right.
It doesn't matter whose idea it is, really. As long as it benefits the business, as long as it benefits the consumer at the street level, and as long as it makes the cash registers ring. And isn't that what this is all about?
Sure it is. And that's why I'm such a proponent of interdependent relationships and trying to make people within franchising understand they are interdependent upon each other to succeed. And there's the ripple effect in either direction if one or the other fails. Certainly it's a tremendous ripple effect if both fail. So
I would actually, Paul, you're kind of softening it. I would consider it mutually assured destruction.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, if the franchisor fails, the franchisees fail. And if the franchisee fails, the franchisor fails. Yet that mutually assured destruction is very, very rarely considered across the table or in conference rooms where, you know, marketing department decides to do X or legal department decides to reconstruct the contract Y, you know, or operations department decides to go Z. The fact that if the franchisees are not successful, neither will be the franchisor, and that is quite true in the reverse.
Well, you know, I like the way you mentioned mutually assured destruction, because at the beginning in talking to you, we talked about acronyms, and the acronym for that is MAD.
Of course. And that's how most associations form, because they're mad.
Right. It definitely conveys the sense of emotion. And we know there's a lot of good that come out of franchisee associations. But there, you know, like I said, you know, there's these fears that franchisors, mm-hmm. that, you know, franchisee associations are going to cause an even more adversarial effect within their franchise organization. And, you know, how do we really dispel those fears and get franchisors to embrace franchisee associations?
Well, I'll sort of jump on the pulpit for just a second, if you'll indulge me.
Absolutely.
What franchisee associations need to consider themselves as, what they need to frame it mentally from board members down, and I don't mean down because I don't think of it that way, but all the way to the individual franchisee, is that the association should be considered a tangible asset on the balance sheet of the franchisor. If you can accomplish that, you have made great strides in accomplishing what or answering the question that you just asked me.
Okay.
We're reading every day about acquisitions and mergers, right?
Right.
You talk about it, you blog about it, we all do.
Mm-hmm.
How interested as an acquiring party am I going to be in paying top dollar for a franchise system if the franchisees are not in a good mood?
Well, it lends to the validation process that a lot of people speak about, and it certainly wouldn't validate very well under those circumstances.
No, in fact, it should take away from the overall cash valuation of the business.
Right.
If you do not have, if you are reliant for cash on the success of your franchisees, and you want to sell that asset, then it is truly in your best interest to have that asset be perceived as such an asset.
Right.
In every way conceivable.
Right. Absolutely. I agree. You know, but looking at it, and of course, we have this adversarial cloud that hangs over this. And a lot of franchisee associations were started, as you said, and as we both said, you know, because somebody got mad. And the emotions started flying. And it seems like in many cases, the members of the franchisee association are typically, or have been typically, the franchisees that are mad, that have the most to lose, and therefore there's not this, and I don't want to use the word dilution, but mix of franchisees that are already part of the franchisee association, and then this is just an issue that needs to be dealt with. In other words, mm-hmm. franchisees being formed for the sole purpose of dealing with something negative. So to that end, it seems to me that for the good of franchising and franchisee associations and relationships with franchisors, that there needs to be more franchisees involved in the franchisee associations before something negative occurs. And to me, it seems like a no-brainer that franchisees would jump at the opportunity to become members of a franchisee association. I mean, what with minimal fees to join a franchisee association against the significant investment that they made in starting their franchise unit or units, and of course their ongoing royalty payments, ad co-op fees, and other financial obligations as set forth in their franchise agreement, it just seems a given that they would invest, that they would want to invest just a wee bit more and join their franchisee association, and yet many do not. I mean, why is that?
Well, Paul, I'm a big fan of the standard deviation, the bell graph.
Right.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, on one extreme end, you will have people that will join regardless, whatever, I'm joining.
Right.
And on the other end, you'll have that little group of people that will say, I'm not joining no matter what you do. I just want to function in my own little world and run my own little business, and I don't want to be part of a union or a great cabal or any of that stuff. I just want to be left alone. Okay, but that leaves the 80% typically in the standard deviation that needs convincing in some way, shape, or another. And as you follow the standard deviation, some are more swayed by the politics and some are more swayed by the benefits. So it really is a critical mix of trying to convince the larger group of franchisees in a system that A, we will advocate on your part with the franchisor. B, we will communicate to you things that they're not telling you. C, we will educate you in things that they're not going to educate you in, whether it has to do with legislation, and not just legislation from the standpoint of funding opposition to small business or legislation that would affect small business negatively, but sometimes it's just a matter of knowing how to comply with the new regulation. You know, you don't always win.
No.
But the franchisor, for very many good reasons, up to and including the fact that if they give you the compliance items and you don't, there could be some sort of tangible connection that they're not unwilling to deal with in today's litigious society.
Right.
So then the final nail in the coffin is, okay, whether my membership dues is $10, $100, or $1,000, the average small business person who happens to be a franchisee is going to always ask themselves, what am I getting for that money? And that's what the associations need to provide, is those other three things I named, that communication, that advocation, the education, but there needs to be benefits of membership. You know, you don't join the swim club because you like to join clubs. You join the swim club because you can go swim there whenever you want.
Right. Right. And as I said, you know, just a little while ago, it seems to me, you know, if franchisees got more involved, obviously it would have this mix that I think would allow prevailing minds or sensible minds to prevail. But so the way I look at it, it would be great if franchisee associations, at least in principle, are formed in the early stages of a franchise concept launching. So with that in mind, I mean, how can you help franchise startups in their planning stage, especially, you know, as it relates to, you know, even getting franchisees associations included in their franchise disclosure documents? I mean, it seems to
right.
me that there would be an initial commitment immediately that can evolve as the system evolves.
That you know, that's an interesting question, and I find it interesting because it's been a topic of conversation very recently and quite often, and that is that if there was a way to get a hold of everybody that has a good idea, let me backtrack, Paul. I apologize.
No problem.
you have a good idea, right? And you put it into practice, and as an independent operator, you're making a fair to good to excellent go of it. And some crazy uncle comes out of the woodwork and says, you should franchise this.
Well, we've heard that all too often, right?
Yeah. So okay, let's franchise it. Now, I'm going to touch the strings of Joe Caruso's heart here, you know, by saying that what those people need is real guidance on what that means. And if we could, you know, foster in some way, shape, or form through an umbrella organization or through the education that we provide on our website, et cetera, the opportunity for those people with great ideas who have the crazy uncle that comes out of the closet and tells them they should franchise it, exactly what they should and should not do, what mistakes they should not make, what roadmap they should follow. And quite frankly, it is in the best interest at that stage of development, even if there's only 10 or 15 or 20 franchisees, to have an organization so that they can communicate among themselves and they can communicate back to you how this model works. It might work in Houston, but it doesn't work in Idaho, and here's why.
Mm-hmm.
That just isn't happening. So, as I said, I'm sure I'm tugging at Joe's heartstrings right now.
Well, today I'm talking live to Steve Ellerhorst, CEO and Executive Director at the IAFD, the International Association of Franchisees and Dealers. Steve, you know, today many franchise organizations have franchise advisory councils. How mm-hmm. do franchisee associations typically work with the Franchise Advisory Council? I mean, you know, what have you seen that works?
Well, there's a couple of models, and one is the Franchisee Advisory Council being established by the franchisor as a method of forestalling the formation of an association. In other words, we put this together, we're funding it, and we're listening to your representatives. Now, there's kind of a graduation of this where those representatives may be named by the franchisor, may be elected by the franchisees, may or may not really have a true voice in what's happening, and then all the way to what I would consider to be an independent franchisee association, which is, by and large, the best formation of a group of franchisees out there. Now, can FACs and independent associations coexist? Yes, but it has to be somewhere on that linear model that says either we, the association, are going to name our FAC advisors, or those FAC advisors are going to be elected under, you know, our guidelines. Beyond that, they carry very little weight, and they actually can do a lot of damage to a system, because what happens is they become the rationale. And by saying the rationale, that franchisor will announce a new product, a new promotion, a new whatever. And what they will in turn say is that, well, we ran it by the FAC.
I laugh because you're so right. Having been a president of a national franchise association advisory board, elected by franchisees, but of course funded by the franchisor, it definitely seemed like we were definitely a mechanism, an extension, if you would, of the franchisor. And even though we were elected by the franchisees would not listen to us a lot of times because they thought we were just an extension of the franchisor.
That, Paul, is why the true independent franchisee associations are the most successful, because they can lay out logically what needs to happen on behalf of their constituents without any fear that, you know, they're not going to be able to fly to wherever it is and meet with whoever it is or stay wherever they need to. I mean, when that funding mechanism is kicked in by the franchisor, and often it's done for not insidious reasons. I mean, they truly want to hear, but as long as they are funding that group, it will always have a little question mark over it.
Oh, absolutely. I've seen it happen. But with that in mind, assuming there is a franchisee, an independent franchisee association within a franchise system and a franchise advisory council, what's your opinion of the franchisee association having a seat on the franchise advisory council? I mean, are there some pros and cons to that?
They absolutely should have a seat, and they absolutely should have say in the matter as to who sits on that council. And quite frankly, that council really becomes, in essence, a committee.
Okay.
And what you really want to have in where this thing sort of develops is that an independent franchisee association will have or should have various functioning committees, and that's what really strengthens the association beyond the funding and the other things we talked about, is that when it comes to a marketing matter, then the marketing committee meets with the marketing division of the franchisor. When it comes to supply chain matters, the purchasing committee meets with the supply chain leaders of the franchisor. When it comes to operational, et cetera, down the line. So when you're talking about a FAC blending in with an association, in my mind, it really translates or should translate into a committee. If there is no connection between the FAC and the independent association, then the franchisor has successfully divided and subsequently conquered.
I was just going to say, and you know what happens with divided, followed by conquered.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Talking about conquer, I think of conquer and I think of control, and I know the issue of control is certainly on your radar screen and something you're very interested in discussing. And you and I had a brief conversation before today's show, and you mentioned it. So would you care to elaborate on the issue that you have of control?
Absolutely. And it's not so much that the franchisor doesn't have certain rights to protect the brand. And in fact, on our website, which is franchise-info.ca, currently on the homepage, I'm sure it'll flip soon so we can stay fresh. there's an article about associations, but there's also an article about, if you click into franchise relations, an article that talks about this issue of control. And really there are two areas where that is becoming, or it's bubbling up, and it's going to continue to bubble up to the surface, where the franchisor exercises operational control beyond the protection of the brand.
Okay.
It is the franchisor's right, and it is their fiduciary responsibility to protect the brand for the benefit of all franchisees included, that have invested in the brand, whether it's publicly traded or not. But as they encroach upon certain operational aspects, the question then arises, what does this have to do with protecting the brand? The same thing is happening with control of suppliers and vendors. It is quite important, and there is a duty and there is a relationship that the franchisor should have when it comes to deciding upon products, particularly products and or services, that might or might not have a negative effect on the consumer and subsequently an effect on the brand. We can talk about E. coli if you like. The franchisor supply chain management group should be inspecting facilities that supply to them. They should be doing QA checks all the time. And if they're doing those things, then the franchisee should be buying those products that have been inspected. But when it comes to things like what shoes you wear, what website you build, what newsletter you use, then you have to start asking the question, is the franchisor getting into an area that is beyond what is reasonable control of the brand and the brand image and protecting the consumers from harm? And I'm seeing that issue cropping up every day.
Well, I think, not to beat this term to death, but a lot of it seems to be common sense, doesn't it?
It's if you read the stories that are out there, once again, I'm not going to name them because I don't have necessarily all the information at my fingertips. But if you read some of the stories out there, franchising is becoming more and more akin to buying a job, not a business.
I understand that, but I do think part of that is also because there are more franchise candidates looking to replace a job as well.
True. I have a personal relationship. That has to do with that. As people are becoming displaced from larger corporations at early ages with significant amounts of dollars in their pocket, the first thing that comes out of their mouths is typically, I always wanted to own my own business. And having been in franchising now for going on 4 decades, and I'm really not that old. I started very young. But I shudder when I hear those words. I just shudder. Because it shouldn't be about buying. If you're buying a job, then there are rules and regulations. Once again, take the vertical line that I talked about regarding control. If you go to the far left and you say, well, a franchisee can do whatever he wants. And you go to the far right and you say franchisor can do whatever they want. In between there becomes independent owner-operator, independent contractor, employee. And there are laws that regulate each of those concepts that are being trampled upon.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But, you know, as we're closing in at the top of the hour, let's change direction a little bit. I mean, you mentioned earlier in the show about the IAFD inaugural convention in Indianapolis, Indiana. I know our co-producer, Caruso, attended the event, and he shared some of his experiences right here on Franchise Today several weeks ago. I'd like to hear your perspective as well. Tell us just, you know, briefly about the convention and your expectations and where you feel you're going with maybe the next convention?
We had, although the numbers were not large, and I'm not ashamed to announce them. I mean, it was 70 or 80 people, 15-plus vendor booths. We put that together in 3 months, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
3 months. So I'm not ashamed of it. What I am proud of is that the people that did come were people that represented large systems. And again, you can read all about this on the website, but I'm sure Joe mentioned to you, you know, Dunkin' Donuts and Domino's and Hardee's and AHOA. And even though these people were only one or two in numbers, they represented large groups. I will tell you, and I don't know if you've seen the Franchise Times article, and I'm not a show for them necessarily, but the content was extremely well received. It was very topical. It was on target. The entertainment and the venue got rave reviews. So if that's anything contrary to what Joe told you, you can call me back after we're done.
You know, it's funny you mention about, you know, one or two people representing, you know, large groups. You know, that's not a lot different than if you look at LinkedIn and you figure out how many connections you have and how many connections would be the result of those connections. So I hear exactly what you're saying. I'd be curious to see a listing of all the people and how many different franchise businesses, franchisees are represented by those 70, 80, or 90 people that actually attended the event.
Sure.
It would be interesting.
Sure.
Well, you know, as you know, franchisee attorney and strategic chair at the IFD, Michael Webster, was on Franchise Today as we kicked off the Legal Eagle franchise series a couple of months ago, although it seems like an eternity ago. I got to know Michael just a little bit in a couple of brief conversations, some email communications, and, of course, our conversation on the show. And I've also heard a great deal about him from Joe Caruso, as he and Michael evidently spent a great deal of time on the phone running the gamut on franchising, franchise relationships, franchise law, and franchise best practices. But I know you work hand-in-hand with Michael at the IFD. Again, as we're closing in on the top of the show, what's that like?
Oh, it's great. I mean, it is absolutely a fun mix for me. And having had the experience of being an executive director, I've had the ability to have firsthand experience of jumping in a dumpster, but also have had firsthand experience of sitting down and talking with attorneys who are very accomplished in franchisee law. So it's given me the ability to speak not only to an employee at a restaurant, but to a CEO or to an attorney or to an insurance person about things that I never dreamed I would know about. And Michael has only facilitated that in fundamental ways that transcend the norm. So I mean, he's a great partner.
Yeah, I can't say yeah, he really is. I really enjoyed speaking with him. Well, Steve, our time is running out. I really enjoyed having you as a guest on Franchise Today.
Thanks for having me, Paul. I really appreciate the opportunity.
You're very welcome. Remember, next week, Franchise Today will be right there with you on an early start to the 4th of July holiday weekend. We'll be back on the air the following week as we start Franchise Marketing Month. Be sure to keep an eye open for details within Franchise social media. Also, be sure to listen to our sister show, Franchise News Radio, Wednesday mornings, 7 a.m. Central, 8 a.m. Eastern. All Franchise Today and Franchise News Radio shows are available on demand and are both part of the Franchise Essentials Media Group. Looking into next week, here's wishing you and yours a fantastic and safe 4th of July holiday weekend. Till next. I'm Paul Segretto, dedicated to franchise success at all levels. Have yourself a great day.